I remember the move vividly because we entered the worst area I ever saw on a battlefield. And we stayed there more than a week. I shudder at the memory of it. We shouldered our weapons and gear, and the column telescoped its way circuitously through muddy draws, slipping and sliding along the slopes of barren hills to avoid observation and consequent shelling by the enemy. It rained off and on. The mud got worse the farther we went. As we approached our destination, the Japanese dead, scattered about in most areas since 1 May, became more numerous. When we had dug in near enemy dead and conditions permitted, we always shoveled soil over them in a vain effort to cut down the stench and to control the swarming flies. But the desperate fighting for 10 days against and around Sugarloaf Hill and the continued prolonged Japanese artillery and mortar fire had made it impossible for the Marine units there to bury the enemy dead. We soon saw that it also had been impossible to remove many Marine dead. They lay where they had fallen, an uncommon sight even to the veterans in our ranks. It was a strong Marine tradition to move our dead, sometimes even at considerable risk, to an area where they could be covered with a poncho and later collected by the graves registration people. But efforts to remove many Marines killed in the area we entered had been in vain, even after Sugarloaf Hill had been captured following days of terrible fighting. The rains had begun 21 May, almost as soon as Sugarloaf Hill had been secured by men of the 6th Marine Division. Because of the deep mud, the able-bodied could scarcely rescue and evacuate their wounded and bring up vital ammo and rations. Regrettably, the dead had to wait. It couldn't have been otherwise. We slogged along through a muddy draw around the base of a knoll. On our left, we saw 6 Marine corpses. They were lying face down against a gentle, muddy slope where they apparently had hugged the deck to escape Japanese shells. They were bunched up, in a row, side by side, scarcely a foot apart. They were so close together that they probably had all been killed by the same shell. Their browning faces lay against the mud in an even row. One can imagine the words of fear or reassurance that had been passed among them as they lay under the terror of the shelling. Each clutched a rusting rifle, and every sign indicated that those tragic figures were new replacements, fresh to the shock of combat. The first man's left hand was extended forward, palm down. His fingers clutched the mud in a death grip. A beautiful shiny gold watch was held in place around the decaying wrist by an elaborate gold metal stretch band. Most of the men I knew, and myself, wore plain, simple, luminous dial, waterproof, shockproof wristwatches with a plain green cloth wristband. How strange, I thought, for a Marine to wear a flashy, conspicuous watch while on the front lines. Stranger still that some Japanese hadn't slipped out during a dark night and taken it. As we filed past the dead Marines, each of my buddies turned his head and gazed at the horrible spectacle with an expression that revealed how much the scene inwardly sickened us all. I had heard and read that combat troops in many wars became hardened and insensitive to the sight of their own dead. I didn't find that to be the case at all with my comrades. The sight of dead Japanese didn't bother us in the least, but the sight of a Marine dead brought forth regret, never indifference.